Hey, I'm an idiot.
Lookout Landing Podcast. I am Nathan Bishop, the managing editor of Lookout Landing, joined again by Scott Weber, editor emeritus. Scott.
Hi. That's my name? Editor emeritus? That's what we're going with?
I mean, it sounds fancy.
Sure. Please explain what it means.
I believe it means was here and then isn't here anymore, so we honor his memory. You're like a fallen hero, I guess?
But I'm here again, so what does that mean?
We just need to add more...
Chris Angel, Mind Freak. That's what that just did to you.
Whew! He just already broke my brain, and we're like 2 minutes into this thing. Anyway, moving on from Scott, I'm also joined by the resident guy that's good at sports on staff, and that is David Skiba. David, hello.
Hello. I've been recently checking my Twitter analytics, and I am displeased with all of you.
Like, oh. Me too, or just the outside world?
Well, I'm mad that I have to apparently at you anytime I want, like, an interaction or something. That's what I've learned.
You know, the first episode of this, I told everybody to follow you. If they didn't do it, it's not my...
Well, all five of them did.
You mean all five people that listened to the last episode of the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, that's how
don't
many I got.
Don't undersell it.
Mom,
that's
Scott's
at
mom.
At least times five. That's at
Scott's
least
David's
five.
David's mom, hello, hello. Nice to see you. Thank you for your support. So what's
Speaking
going
on? Scott's mom, hold on. My mom has a Lookout Landing username and still hasn't told me what it is.
Has she commented, do you know?
She claims to not have commented, but I am suspicious.
Well, I'm trying to think of...
I got a few ideas of who it could be. Just kidding,
so
I
do
don't
I.
read the comments.
Is your mom the kind of person that would berate you in the comments, or would she be... fawningly supportive, or would she just try to blend in with the culture?
I think she would berate me because she is an Irish Catholic, oldest of seven, so the philosophy there would be iron sharpens iron.
David, I've read your comments, and that could literally be anybody.
Which is why I'm having trouble finding her.
Oh, David's mom, if you're listening, please never tell him. Your username is.
Don't worry, she's very withholding, like pretty much every, oh, that explains a lot.
Oh wow, we're already there, man. We've gotten way too deep already into our psyches in this episode. So guys, the Mariners are playing baseball today. They did play baseball earlier
mm-hmm.
today.
Yes,
it was fun.
Yes, it was. Sure,
they won 7-0. Did either of you or both of you listen to any of it?
I did. Was unable to listen, and I watched some highlights.
Mm-hmm. I think I caught the opening three innings and the back two, because in the middle there I drove someone to the airport.
Oh, you're a nice guy. I listened to most of it, and it was just fun. I guess there's people that don't get excited about this stuff and want everything. Like there's a whole segment of baseball fans that just aren't happy unless everything means something important.
You mean just aren't happy?
I guess I could have stopped there. Yeah, they want
really the only key thing that matters there.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of the internet out there that's just not going to be happy, I suppose. But everybody wants things to mean something, and the first day of the Cactus League doesn't mean anything other than again, it's we just want to beat the hell out of our hated rivals, the Padres, and that's exactly what they did, guys. They went out there.
Yeah.
James Paxton threw strikes. Who all hit dingers today? Chris Iannetta roped a ball. We had Stephen
Goody. That
was
a shot. That was a total
shot.
Goody
put a ball about 430 feet out to center field.
Dead center.
Did you guys read Matt's recap at all?
Yes. Yeah.
I think he nailed it there with Goody. It's just as long as he's healthy, like this is who he is now. The comeback is over. This is Franklin Gutierrez 2. Whatever. you know?
That would be absolutely
where the bat is the plus tool and not the defense.
Exactly. Yeah, but the bat is and the bat is not just a plus tool, it's the power. It's almost elite level power. I remember his first year with the Mariners, I think, in 2009, when he got a hold of one and just ripped it probably 20 feet past the left center Death Valley out in Petco Park against the Padres. And that was at the time before they'd moved the fences in. And it was just, I remember him hitting that ball. And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea that he could hit the ball that far. And that's just what he's become now. He's doesn't look huge, but this is what we have. We have a power hitting kind of part-time platoonish left fielder, which is weird. I'm trying to think of another player the Mariners have had that would be like it.
Oh man. Ruben Sierra?
Well, but Ruben wasn't, he wasn't an outfielder, was he?
Yeah, he was playing left, right?
Oh, no. I can't believe that happened.
I think it was Ruben Sierra.
Well, I guess they let Mark Trumbo play left, so I guess Ruben could have played it as well.
Mark Trumbo did hit some bombs, missing Mark.
Did you guys see? He's been a star of early spring training because he's still stuck in left for the Orioles, and multiple people are tweeting about the atrocities he's committed already in a couple.
Nothing but Benny Hill music and Family Circus cartoons.
Yeah.
We can't be this hard on Mike. I mean, or Mark. I mean, come on.
Well, you're the man that has a picture of you kissing his visage outside of safe.
What is that? What is that?
Explain
really?
Your
what
love
is...
of Mark Trumbo, David.
The kiss or the love?
I think they go hand in hand, personally.
I would hope they do. Otherwise, you're disagree. A dishonest lover.
Come on. I mean, we kiss dogs, don't we? Anyway,
explain your love of Mark Trumbo, please.
Mark Trumbo, I love because he was the classic Jack acquisition against his own will or desire on a team that was just hitting the floor, came over, had the classic Jack, why the hell did you grab this player first month, and then proceeded to kind of kick some ass on a team that otherwise needed a little bit of ass kicking besides Nelson Cruz. I mean, it was like, I mean, Trumbo plus like, whenever that kid ran into a ball, it was so far gone. Yeah,
absolutely. The power tool was legit. And I think I love the power tool. You're kind of there with me. Like, there's just something so, I don't know.
It's that sublime. It's like what, you know, people were painting in the 1800s, like these giant, you know, visages of Yellowstone National Park. Like, that's Mark Trumbo.
He is half like, dome.
He's hitting balls over half dome.
And yeah, the other half is his skill set. It's not there. But the
actually,
half
is Mark Trumbo old?
Does faithful? Exist.
What's that?
Is he Old Faithful, maybe?
Strikes out just every game right on schedule?
Yeah, like sometimes you show up and it doesn't blow up.
Poor Mark. I feel bad for that guy. I wish somebody just give him a year at DH and let him swing.
Exactly. Just give him some fucking first base and DH time.
I completely agree. There's
only one team that's really allowed that level of production from first base consistently over the last 6 years, and it's the Mariners. So
it's true.
I don't know how that's going to work anywhere else.
I feel who's the Padres' first baseman? He should be a Padre.
God, I don't even know.
Derek Lee.
Wait,
no.
Settle. It's a joke.
Oh, Derek. Thank you, Scott. I just got it. So let's circle back around to the game today.
Former San Diego Padre, rookie year.
Was he really?
Yeah, rookie year.
Did I not know that?
Because it was like 10 games in like 96 or 97.
Oh, jeez. So you guys didn't listen to all the game, but you listened to most of it. I feel like I didn't really get – there's nothing about Stefan Romero hitting a home run the other way that really gets exciting to me. Did really get excited for about 30 seconds when Ketel Marte drew a walk, seeing the Z, and making Jerry DePoto very happy and proud, and then immediately stole second base. And I was all ready.
And then proceeded to immediately get thrown
toot plan right away. It was just the most Mariners experience. I'm about to get excited and really capitalize on some momentum, and no.
And see ya. Well, that's just part of being 22 in first game of spring, I think, man.
Oh, of course.
Because it sounded like he was peeking at stealing third from the radio broadcast and then was like, oh, shit.
I'm so excited for Ketel Marte this year.
Me too.
I mean, he's going to drive me crazy probably, but if he's able to draw walks like he did today, it's going to be a really, really good time. Anything else stand out for you about the game? I mean, for me, it's just there's nothing to analyze here, guys. It's just about the joy of having a baseball game on the radio, hearing Aaron and Rick talk, hearing Mike Blowers come into the studio, hearing Dave Sims back and healthy and recovering from his cancer surgery in the offseason. And
That was awesome.
We got Shannon Dreyer on the radio and Mike Salk on the radio too. And just it's just a fun thing to have back in our lives. I mean, that's what baseball is more than anything. It's like a part of your life more than any other sport. So it was good to hear
for
it.
For sure.
Anything stand out at all from you?
No, it was good. Got to be happy about the pitching too. Four hits. That's it. Yes, four hits. Shut up.
That's where I was going to go. What stuck out to me was, I think about a week ago, I was thinking, man, I can think of only three really solid contenders or three people who I know for sure are going to be in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. But then when I was looking through the list today, it's like, wait, hold on. There are a lot of names who could really be those four guys.
The pile
including
is huge.
Papa Roach. Roach pitched today.
Papa Roach is there.
I hadn't heard that nickname yet, and now I'm so angry at 90s me for having ever listened to that band.
Why are you mad?
Well, David, you weren't really around for the 90s, but you know.
I remember Papa Roach, Scars. That was, I think, literally the first song I bought on iTunes.
See, Papa Roach came out way before iTunes.
That's well, I know that.
First time, yeah. That means that you were a fan and continued to be a fan in the 4 years in which Papa Roach was no longer a thing, and then you purchased it on iTunes when it was available.
Come on. 2003, Papa Roach was dropping hits. Club bangers.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure that was true at some point somewhere in Phoenix or something.
Well, that's where I was.
I mean, they got some good jams. Let's be real. Last Resort?
Yeah.
I will not be party to this. I am disassociating myself from all of this musical commentary. So, David, you were touching on the bullpen there, which is like probably, I don't know, there's tons of amazing storylines for this team coming into spring training with all of the roster turnover. But if there was one easy, like if you were just a lazy hack who was just mailing in your columns about the Mariners over the last 2 years.
I would never do that.
You wouldn't, but there are other people that may.
I would.
Oh, yeah.
I would definitely do that.
Have you?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Last 3 months for sure.
But if you were that kind of guy who's just kind of, you know, writing out the string there and just writing about the team to write about the team, the easy thing to fixate on between 2014's success and 2015's failure was the like complete opposite experience of the bullpens. 2014 was just amazing. Almost everybody had a career year. And then last year you had injury, you had Fernando Rodney just going full whatever the hell it was.
Full Rodney.
Did he go full Rodney?
Is that never go full Rodney?
I think full Rodney is when he did the arrow in the eighth inning. That's
yeah,
full Rodney.
The Angels,
that's peak Rodney.
I loved it so much. So
did Mike Trout.
Any other team I would have hated it, but I wish that they would talk crap all game, every game against that team. Rivalry.
I wish that like one of them would like on their cleats in the silver Sharpie write Pujols' contract.
Amount owed.
Years left. Amount owed.
Some sort of digital display on the side of the shoe.
Between every half inning, the PA announcer brings it up.
Oh, man. I wish.
Holy shit. He's still got like 7 years left, you guys.
He has so much time left for so much money, and he can't even run to first. It's really bad.
That's amazing.
I almost feel bad. I'm not a Pujols fan per se, but I feel like what we're going to remember from him is going to be these Angels decline
years.
And we're going to totally undersell how ridiculously amazing that guy was in St. Louis.
Oh, as a Cardinal, I mean, he was the god.
But it's funny because he got overlapped by early 2000s Bonds for years.
Yeah, that's true.
So it was like he was finishing second in the MVP all this time because Barry Bonds was having an on-base percentage of like 620 or something like that. And I'm not exaggerating. I think he got close to 600 one year in 2003 or 4 or something.
Dude, it is kind of crazy, though, because he has 6 years left. He's already got 560 homers.
Uh-huh.
And he hit 40 last year.
And the power's not going anywhere.
Wait, Pujols dropped 40 bombs last year?
He dropped a 40-burger last year.
Damn.
Yeah.
He's basically become slower Mark Trumbo.
Yeah, if you look at the slash line, it's like a nice Mark Trumbo year. except with half the strikeouts or a third.
And a quarter of the money.
A quarter. Oh, man. Mark Trumbo. Has Mark Trumbo made for his career what Albert Pujols makes in a year? I have probably nothing even close.
Well, what? He got 9 this year, right? Or something like that?
Mm-hmm. But Pujols gets 25.
Pujols makes 20. Pujols makes 25 this year.
Man.
I feel like the Angels had to have paid Trumbo a little.
Was this Trumbo's first or second year of arbitration? Because now I'm trying to figure out if Trumbo has made more or less than Willie Bloomquist did.
Oh, God.
I think this is his last year of...
I think you're right. I think that's why they traded him. We're going
to
get...
Mark Trumbo, to date, has made $13 million.
Oh, man.
No.
And he's going to make $9 million this year, which will bring it to $22 million.
Which means he has not yet made a... at the end of this year, he will not have made a 2016 Albert Pujols salary. But that's baseball. And even these guys that are at the league minimum are making more than most of us are ever going to make in a year. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for it. But let's talk about the bullpen. Well, actually, before we talk about the bullpen, let me quickly digress. Let's talk what we're drinking, because we haven't done that yet.
Ooh, topical.
I'm going to go. Well, everybody loves beer, right?
It's true.
It's true. David, what are you drinking a local brewery again?
So I was, but between the time we started and the time that we've got to now, I've changed over.
Next. I have. Next man up.
Yeah. This is like David is the Seahawks of drinkers. Yes.
It's too true. Right now I'm doing the Silver City Brewery Fat Scotch Ale.
Ooh, 9.2%?
9.2%. Got a bomber of it. It's a really nice and balanced Scotch Ale. A little lower on the IBUs, I think, than I'm used to for a Scotch Ale, but I actually prefer this style.
You know, those guys are like the grand dawn of grand Kitsap Poopas? County. Yeah, they're the
Papa Roach.
They are not the Papa Roach. They are whatever a good and prestigious title is for Charlotte. I'm going to end this podcast so early this week. They are the flag bearers for Kitsap County Brewing out on my side of the water. They've been at it longer than most people, and they just have figured out 3 or 4 or 5 beers that they know that they're going to do, and they just do them really well. They're just really refined.
Totally.
And that's what I mean, getting everything they drink. It's just, this is, we know our beer. This is what we're making every time I drink stuff.
And they got the nod from Safeco. I mean, they have the red in there, which is awesome.
And they've got Jim Moore backing them, and Jim is a discriminating drinker, I'm sure.
Ooh.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And then
and Willie in the Honda Ridgeline
on deck. So I'm doing a West Coast tour with my beers. So on deck, I have the Ninkasi Vanilla Otis, the oatmeal stout, 7% ABV. So I'm excited for that. And that's going to be my break between the 9.2 of the Silver City. And then I'm going to another 9.2 to finish, which will be the Lagunitas Cappuccino Stout.
Oh, that's a good beer. I like that one.
Keep it nice and light. I like it.
I mean, easy drinking.
Scott, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Sierra Nevada Ruthless Rye IPA. One of my favorite IPAs.
Love Sierra Nevada.
I had Sierra Nevada last week as well, so it seems like I'm just going through the whole thing.
They need the advertising.
Yeah, they're struggling right now. Distribution is not brilliant. So I'm drinking that. That is an alcohol percentage, which is on the back, 6.6%. And then on deck, I'm not going to say it, but I bet Skiba can guess what it is.
Oh, no. Is it? Oh, no. So I showed up. For the listeners, Scott and I have spent way too much time together in the last 4 days. And when I arrived at his domicile on Sunday, I opened the fridge to see 24 Bud Light Twist Top 16-ounce bottles.
Correct statement.
That's your on-deck beer?
Yes. I mean, I've had a few before this.
Okay.
I have to travel to California and back tomorrow, so I'm trying to...
Yeah, being on a plane is so hard.
You got to fly the plane, you got to take it off, you got to land it. Sounds hard. Sounds really rough. I feel bad for you.
I have zero training, so...
Yeah, maybe start with the Bud Light then.
I am just wrapping up with a bomber of the... This is a beer I've never had before. The Pelican Brewing Cold Coast Cascadian Pilsner, which is 7%, which is a little bit high for a Pilsner. It's definitely designed definitely designed to be a little hop forward. I right when I moved back to Washington after college in about 2005, 2006... My wife went on a camping trip down the Oregon coast and found Pelican right before all the craft brewery scene just exploded and fell in love with their beer. And we've had really good experiences with their beer. So this one's good. It's a Pilsner is not my normal cold, windy, rainy weather kind of beer. But the ABV got me kind of interested because you don't see Pilsners that high. And then on deck is the kind of beer that a baseball game gets me in the mood for. And that's the Ninkasi Hop Cooler Citrus IPA, which I've never had either. So I'll be opening that one soon, and I'm very excited for it. Sounds fresh, sounds hot. It's got pictures of tangerines or oranges.
Sure. Tangelos, perhaps.
Yeah.
That is not a fruit.
By the way, I need to clarify before I get raked over the coals for having a Bud Light here in the house. I have several friends who like to drink Bud Light. Those of whom came over the next night, in which Skiba also showed up at my house. I was thinking they were going to drink the Bud Light, but then Skiba brought some beer from a local brewery that was of a high alcohol percentage,
and they were smitten.
All they drank, and it got very loud.
Which, as you know from the song that we opened the podcast with, is our theme for the week. We are going to get loud.
Getting loud.
Hopefully we already
let's
have kind
get
of.
Loud.
So
let's get loud.
Okay. Let's veer back to the bullpen.
Perfect.
Who do you think would be the biggest Jennifer Lopez fan?
Oh, wow. Ooh.
Great question.
Oh. It's not Charlie, but I want it to be.
It's not Charlie. Charlie likes I bet he likes indie music.
Is it Benoit?
He listens to a lot of Lumineers.
Benoit is too old. No, Benoit might be exactly the right age
for
J-Lo.
See, that's the right age. Yeah. Like, J-Lo was getting loud right when he was in his prime.
We have so many white dudes with beards in the bullpen right now.
Do you think that Wade Miley has any idea who Jennifer Lopez is?
He watches the current season of American Idol.
Yeah, I think Wade Miley would assume J-Lo is Britney Spears with a snake.
This is not topical analysis of the Mariners bullpen situation, you guys. What are our readers and listeners going to think of us?
Okay, how about do you want to do the 7, or are we going 8 or 7? 8?
We're going to go for probably a
7.
7-man pen.
It's going to be 7.
It's going to be 7. So you've got Charlie Frobisch is in. I mean, we're going to assume no injuries, which is, you know, something will happen.
Yeah, between now and opening day, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to assume no injuries at this point. Charlie Frobisch is in. Steve Cizek is in.
Benoit is in.
Nuno is in.
I think so, too. Yeah, you guys see him as just, like, kind of the long man, like, swing guy out of the bullpen?
I think so.
Absolutely.
And Cervais gave him a hat tip today after the performance as well. Which bodes, I mean, first game, but
how do you
well.
Know it wasn't televised? Did he like say know. As he was commenting, I would like to tip my hat?
He mentioned him in his post game comments.
Oh, okay. So it was a metaphorical hat tip.
That means
he didn't literally tip his hat while saying he did a good job.
Well, how do you know?
Because I saw it.
So we have Nuno's in. I agree with that. I think Nuno's the best fit for – not only is he a great fit for a swing guy, he's the best guy to pop in for an emergency start because that will happen too. You just hope it's not the wrong people. I definitely think that Scribner is going to make it, even though he's got that home run problem. That walk to strikeout ratio is just too good to ignore.
Okay, so we still need at least one more lefty, huh?
No, I think two is fine. We can get by
with
two.
Who's the second?
Nuno
and Furbush.
Oh, that's right. Nuno's lefty.
Yeah. So you have.
I think Peralta makes it. I think he makes it.
That's a big one. He's definitely a long shot because he's an NRI, non-roster invite.
They got a clear space for him to keep him.
Yeah, they would. And you know, what do we think of Tony Zitch?
Very pro. I mean, clearly the orbs behind him.
Yeah, they love the guy. They bought him a pool table. Did you guys see that?
Did you hear that story today about $1 for his cash considerations?
Yes. Rick Riz was really, really into it.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a pretty great story. And the guy has great stuff. I mean, he's really... Relievers are terrible because they can be what they were in 2014 and then be what they were in 2015. But that's kind of what's fun, is they can work in the reverse order as well. And these guys, like, they really are kind of living in the, like... last frontier professional baseball. Like, these guys are basically living. There's a few of them that close that get, you know, your Andrew Millers that get 3-4 year deals, and we saw a little bit of a gold rush for them. But traditionally, they're scraping by on 1 to 2+ pitches, one inning at a time, hoping that their small sample size gets them by. And it's kind of fun to watch these guys come in and just seeing who's going to pop up to the top every year. And Zich is definitely the kind of guy that can do that. So where does that put us? Does that put us at 5 that we've talked about?
I think that's 6.
I think that – no, did we – really? Okay.
Okay.
And then you've got guys like Justin DeFratis. You've got
– yeah, Rollins, Roach.
Ryan Cook.
I don't think Rollins is going to make it, but he has options. I wrote about him today. I'm pretty sure he has options. He was a rule.
Also gonna,
he was rule
I'm
five
gonna toss
last
in
year.
Danny Holson too. Tossing in Danny.
Oh,
Holson.
Interesting.
I love Danny Holson.
Me too. How amazing.
That would be an amazing story.
I mean, if we're just going to pull for narratives, that's the
that would be one, the one you'd want.
Yeah, that's the number one bullpen storyline to watch for. Guape, I'm butchering some of these names.
Michael Guape, yeah.
Michael.
Yeah, he's probably going to start in AAA. I don't think DeFratis is going to make it, although I don't have any qualms with him not making it, because he was a really good pitcher in 2014. And I think that Ryan Sandberg had no business being in charge of a major league team last year, so I think he got
sampled. Also, you have Joe Weiland and
Ryan Cook.
Cody Martin, too.
Ryan Cook. Did we ever find Cody Martin? I have no
idea. I don't know where he is.
Yeah, no. Ryan Cook is a decent candidate. You know, there's just – it's just going to kind of be throwing it against the wall like it is every year, right? Like, you've got 1 to 2 guys totally. You're counting on. I kind of think that they seem a little bit more bullish on Cishek. Steve Cishek.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that yet.
They're kind of anointing him the closer already. With this understanding that he can lose the job, but he's kind of their number one plan A for closer. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
That's weird.
It is weird. He was not good last year at all. But yeah,
I think maybe they're just like, the funky delivery is going to do it for us in the ninth.
I think the term has become funky ass Gumby shit. Is what?
No, Carson Smith was badass Gumby. We can't have two Gumbies.
Oh, there you go.
Well, why haven't you brought this up all the times that I've been using that phrase then, David?
Because no one listens to me. I mean, I only got 5 new followers.
Will you guys please follow David so that I don't have to hear about this anymore? Please. You'd really be doing me a solid. So what do we think of this bowl? How do you project a bullpen, guys? Like,
there is a way.
You're looking for stuff, basically, right? Like, you want
2 pitches, right, per person.
You have your guys. You have your guys like Benoit that have proven over that are kind of the exception, that for the last 5-6 years they've proven that they can hang in this role and they're going to do it. But for the most part, you're just kind of looking for whoever comes into spring training healthy and throwing well.
Yeah, this looks like the type of bullpen too, where you have probably 11 or 12 guys that are going to be, it could go either way. I mean, we haven't even talked about guys like David Rollins or Jonathan Arrow. Like, there's a few people that are still in there. So to me, I look at this, what they're doing, and I think back to a couple years ago when they were also throwing a bunch of, you know, pasta on the fridge and seeing if it sticks or it slides down. Like, there's going to be some of these guys that have a really short leash, and you're going to have a lot of turnover in the first month in the bullpen. That's my guess. Like, remember Cameron Lowe? Remember that? Yeah,
sure
do.
Yeah, I mean, it can tank pretty quickly. So I, you know, if you're going to take this strategy, it's one of these things where it can totally pan out, but it can also have a lot of growing pains. So I wouldn't be surprised if this looked kind of rough for the first 6 weeks.
But I think this is the right strategy in terms of roster construction, because thinking about the most fungible portion of the 25 man, it's absolutely the bullpen.
Is that a soft G? Unfungible? I thought it was always. Thought it was fungible.
It's fungible?
Like a fungo.
That's a whole different thing.
Fungos are fun.
Yeah, I mean, I broke my buddies and I always feel bad about it, but
Scott, you were a golfer, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, I broke a Big Bertha once on the driving range, so there you go.
Think of a fungo like a 3-wood.
Okay. Alright, so I'll hit it about 180 and heal it. and it will turn sharply to the right. God,
how did you get captain?
He has people
leadership
skills.
People skills. Hey.
I always remember.
I got leadership qualities. Okay. Translated.
So the bullpen is, I agree. The David, you're right on there. That's the way to build a bullpen. And honestly, weirdly, that's the thing that Bill Bavasi was super good at back in the day. He was bad at everything else, but the guy knew how to put together a bullpen. And I don't know how much of that is Safeco, or maybe old Safeco 1.0 before they brought the fences in, but, the Mariners have had really good luck with last year being the exception of bringing in the pile. Yes. And letting guys kind of fight it out and finding some gems in there. And really, we're all burned from last year, but those guys largely aren't around anymore other than Furbush. And so I feel like
he was not around much last year.
I don't see any reason to feel like, I mean, it's just wild speculation at this point, but there's no reason to expect this team to be, this bullpen to be worse than league average. No. That's kind of.
I mean, I don't even know what a league average pen means. There's so many people coming in and out of it.
Well, and that's what Scott's talking about, too. And Scott's right, too. Bullpens are so fluid. I mean, if there's any part of the roster that's getting juggled within the first 2 months and if,
first 2 weeks, even.
Yeah, and if there's any spot on the team where it kind of feels like roles really need to get figured out before things really start to gel and come together, it's that kind of thing where you can catch fire where, like, you know, all of a sudden you put Wade Davis in on the eighth inning and he becomes this thing, or like, you know, how the Mariners caught fire with Brandon Maurer a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Where it was like, oh my God, this could be Craig Kimbrel all over again, the way the guy was throwing. But it's just so hard to predict. I don't think there's any reason. I feel like as fortunate as the team was in 2014 with their bullpen, they were equally unfortunate last year. And I just don't expect that kind of horrible performance again. I'm sure we're going to have blown leads. I'm sure there'll be frustrating losses. But to the extent that we had last year, that just seems really unlikely to me.
Well, and I almost wonder, I'm thinking back to last year's preseason, and I'm wondering if last year was maybe a problem of trying to over-designate roles preseason. Didn't it feel like last year things were like a little more strict, like we knew 6 of 7 of the guys coming in or something. Yeah. And then it's like once we lost that specific random role we decided to give to an arm, it's like, oh, God, you know, everything's up in the air now.
And well, and in retrospect, I mean, people were talking about it before the season, too. And we even talked about it in 2014. But you could see that you could look at every player's career and notice that 2014, almost everybody hit their 80th or 90th ceiling. Percentile. Yeah. Like it just, there was no reason to expect that ever again, but it's, that puts a team in a really awkward spot of, you know, if you break that bullpen up, that was just great. I mean, you look ridiculous if the bullpen's bad and the Mariners elected to try to keep it together. And, you know, to a moderate extent, it cost Jack Cerenzik and Lloyd McClendon their jobs. So, the bullpen, it we'll see what happens, I guess. But I just think that there's a lot of reason to believe it's going to be a lot better than last year.
Well, and the listeners won't really get a good sense of this, but we're so blessed on staff to have Eric Blankenship, who does incredible research and then decides to not publish it. Yeah. And it's just so frustrating. But one thing he showed us was it was back when Carson Smith was dealt. And, you know, I think people were reasonably a little worried about dealing.
Carson was great last year. The one.
Yeah, probably our best bullpen arm.
He was elite.
He showed, because Carson Smith was a 2-win, you know, player out of the pen. And he showed that pretty much never has been repeated in MLB history, except for, or it was like in the last 15 years, like 3 players that had back-to-back 2 wins out of the pen.
I mean,
so
yeah,
it's just,
your relievers that maintain the kind of performance that Carson Smith showed last year are your Mariano Rivera's, your Trevor Hoffman's, your Craig Kimbrel's, like the elite of the elite of the elite. Now, Carson could end up being that guy, and if so, that trade's going to look terrible. But, you know.
Although I don't know how terrible it is if Wade Miley's a legitimate number 3.
Yeah, the question's still out, and Eric has – David brought up Eric. Eric has something really fun that I think we're actually going to get onto the site soon about Leonis Martin. That I'm really, really excited about.
It's
neither
cool.
Here nor there, but he's got some really cool stuff. And David's right. Eric is he doesn't publish a lot for us, but he's definitely kind of a muse for all of us when it comes to just knowledge of the game and historical precedent and that kind of thing. But David, you were also veering towards something else that I think is one of the major storylines for this team right now, which is holy crap, they're having a lot of fun. And more fun than I remember most Mariner teams having. Scott, have you been able to keep an eye on that at all? Does that seem different to you in any way?
Yeah, definitely. I love what I've been seeing. Pool table in the clubhouse, it's all good.
That does sound like fun.
Yeah, it's like reminiscent fun. Of Sweeney Griffey, right? I mean, that was Sweeney Griffey, right?
2009.
Yeah.
Mike Sweeney.
Yes. Yeah,
what a callback that is.
But they were having a blast.
Hug for you, David.
Thank you. But they were having a total – and then Ichiro, remember? Like, Ichiro was, like, finally –
yeah.
You know, the whole talk was, oh, finally we're seeing his personality because of Griffey, which is, I think, a little harsh on Ichiro. But it's reminiscent of that.
It reminds me, too – somebody asked on Twitter, and I want to do a few more questions because we asked for him and got some good ones. But one of the questions somebody asked me on Twitter was, what does this spring training remind you of? And I'm going way back with it, but honestly, it's going back to like the mid-90s Griffey years when that guy just ran the roost. And Griffey, for all of his strengths and weaknesses, he was a cut-up, man. He wanted to have fun all the time. And we're talking like the years where he was losing steak dinner bets to Lou and putting a cow in his office, like a whole live cow in his office. And that's the kind of stuff that I kind of think about when I'm thinking about this kind of spring training, where I feel like there's this idea of the leaders are so comfortable, DePoto and Service and the staff, they're very comfortable with themselves, and they're not fearing that if I give the leaders, they've instituted this leadership structure, this power structure, where they're not going to give equal rope to everybody on the team, but Robinson Cano, Felix, Cruz, Seager, the guys that are the leaders on this team, they're going to kind of like make them the intermediaries between them and the rest of the roster and give them the chance to lead this team. And I think that's so empowering for these guys.
Totally.
And they were just playing this goofy situational hitting game, which I don't think anybody really took super seriously. But the idea of letting Cruz and Cano pick teams and then just go out and just try to win, it just seemed like such a fun thing for those
guys
out there.
No, and we used to do that. I was on a very, very competitive team in high school, and where we put 12 guys on that roster in a D1 team.
Were you the captain?
Were you?
Not my junior year.
But did you play your senior year?
Yes.
Oh, were you the captain?
We didn't have captains.
Cop out.
After specifically calling out the junior year as well.
Jorge Posada is like the only like captain of all time, which was like a fan joke. What, you wear a captain's armband as a baseball player?
Circle back to your point.
Sure. So anyway, but we used to do that BP. We used to do a situational game in lieu of BP because, I mean, that team was so stacked. We like I said, we put, I think, 12 guys on a D1 roster. So we were just... you know, our practices were mostly fun, and it actually focuses your BP, despite the fact that you're having fun and it's a competition. But you know, you're trying to win something instead of just trying to see how many you can hit out, and that matters.
Well, and we've talked a little bit, and we got to tread carefully with that comparison to the Seahawks too. But we've talked a little bit about the comparisons between what Pete Carroll did in his early regime and what Jerry DePoto kind of seems like he's doing now. And I think with baseball, it's even more apt in some ways than what Pete does, because baseball for fans, and I think even for the players, it gets boring as hell. You guys, like, spring training gets boring.
Oh, it's a grind.
The repetition, the daily, like, your challenge is as much figuring out ways to stay motivated and to enjoy yourself as anything else. And the idea of coming up with, you know, fun competitions, or like Joe Madden does, like dress up days on travel days, or whatever goofy, silly, fun, competitive thing you can do to like differentiate today from yesterday, you know, it makes it more fun for the guys. They're more engaged, their brains are more more high active, and they're having a good time. And I don't remember a Mariner leadership or coaching staff that embraced it the way this one is doing.
Yeah.
Let me throw out a different perspective here, if I can interject, because, you know, this is interesting. We've all been fans of the Mariners for a long time, right? We've seen a lot of regime changes and stuff like that.
Seen some shit.
And for me, you talk about, you know, this goes back to the 90s. I don't even think it really goes that far back for me. I kind of think about 2009 over again, mm-hmm. and the first year of Jack Cerenzik, which seems so crazy to think about, mm-hmm. that that's kind of the optimism and the sense of no pressure at all that we're describing, right? Like, yeah. the confidence in which DePoto and Service are doing their jobs, that's because they have more job security now than they'll maybe ever have.
That's fair. Yep.
And I think that sometimes we can get a little bit swept up in that because we don't have any other context to look at. We don't have a history of decisions. We don't have
any failure.
Mistakes. Yeah, there's no downside right now. I think everyone agrees that DePoto had a nice off season and then Service is doing all the right things, but the sample size is so small. And when we look at things so analytically, when we talk about players and we're always talking about you can't make any meaningful conclusions without a large sample size. I don't think we have that from DePoto or Service yet. And I don't mean to throw a wet blanket on it. I just look at this as a very fun time. Absolutely. It's always fun when it's totally new and there is no pressure.
And nothing matters.
Yeah. But for me, this is like, it's very familiar. And so I think I have a hard time getting too pumped up and excited about it because I've done this dance before. So, you know, that's just my perspective from it all. I think I agree with everything that's happening. I've loved all the moves for the most part that have been made, and it seems like they're having a great time, and I think that's awesome. But I know how quickly that can sour and go south the more and more you move on.
That is very, very good analysis right there.
And I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, I think I feel like with Scott Service is, you know who he reminds me of more than anybody, just when I watch him lead and I hear him talk, is Don Wakamatsu, to bring it back to what Scott was talking about. Yeah. And I like Don Wakamatsu. He was a kind of manager that I would play for. He was quiet. He trusted his players, and he wanted them to take the reins of leadership. I think he was a bad fit for that roster, particularly in 2010. He had some malcontents, and that's on Jack and him together. But I see Service, and I see that same kind of quiet, stoic thing, but with this understanding of I want to empower my players. And that's a really dangerous game because you can have that as a philosophy, but at the end of the day, you're handing that over to the players. So if the Mariners...
You can lose it. You can lose it.
You can lose it with one Sean Figgins blow up.
Yep.
That's all that it takes. And that's going to be... And that will be interesting because I think, and again, with no sample size, and Scott, that was a great point. I feel like the leadership of players on this roster is way more adept and way more able to cope with that kind of struggle than that 2009-2010 roster was that Wakamatsu had.
Yeah, there's much more experience on this team, no doubt.
And I just feel like, you know, the players seem to respect Felix and Cruz and to know so much that if those guys, if Service can keep those guys' ear, nothing's going to go too wonky as far as who's questioning who, because those guys are going to put anybody straight.
Right.
Well, and I have to say, I think, Scott, you touched on the Joe Maddon thing. I think a lot of
that was
the Joe Maddon.
You jerk.
Was it?
Yes.
Let Scott talk Joe Maddon. Oh. Whatever. Joe Maddon was brought up.
Say Joe Maddon if you want me to complete
the
thought.
Can you say Joe Maddon really quick?
Unfollow David.
Joe Maddon.
So, thank you.
At Scuba
Steve. So, Scott, you mentioned Joe Maddon.
Unfollow button at the top.
And for me, some of the stuff that Joe Maddon does feels a little hokey and a means of keeping a mediocre team on the fringe interested in winning.
You're referring to the Rays now.
Yes. Yeah. Joe Maddon with the Rays.
Yeah.
And obviously not with this year's Cubs, mm-hmm. which we can get to later. But for me, it's a team that's winning and that's in the hunt, like in a strong way, doesn't need that sort of, they're making their own fun, frankly. They don't need dress up dates for travel.
Winning is fun. The daily activity going out there.
I mean, that's what they're all there to do.
The 2001 Mariners had a hell of a good time because they went out and beat the living crap out of every team they played every single day.
Well, so. I'll say this about Joe Maddon too. And I don't know if anyone's heard it yet, but Dan Heron was on the Jonah Carey podcast, like maybe a week or I don't know how long it was. I just found it this week. And he talked a lot about Joe Maddon, and he talked a lot about the, you know, they'd win and they'd have a dance party in the clubhouse, and the stars of the game would go and like they'd have to do like a little dance circle and stuff, and they could wear shorts on the plane, and it was very, very loose. You know, Maddon let them do whatever they wanted, but when it came to things that they had to do in the game, he was very demanding. Mm-hmm. And he would afford you all of these freedoms and personalities, but like if you didn't bust your ass down to first base, he was going to get all over you for it. So I think that he's got kind of a unique balance of management. And you know, that team that Dan Heron was on was a good team. That was a good Cubs team, and he still did it. So, you know, I don't know. I'm a Joe Maddon fan, so maybe I'm a little.
So you're saying he's like the managerial equivalent of the license plate holder that says work hard, play hard. That's Joe Maddon, yes. Basically.
I would say Joe Maddon gets loud all the time.
What do we think? If you're driving, what car do you have to be driving for a work hard, play hard license plate to land?
I'm thinking
is it landable?
2001 Zoolander style yellow Hummer.
Wow.
Yeah. Yellow Hummer.
Wow.
And it had to be the H2.
Actually, you know what? I think it was a yellow Nissan Xterra.
What about the
was a Hummer. It was a Hummer.
Who did the Azteca? Was that a Pontiac?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's the Walter White Breaking Bad car, right?
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know. I've never seen the show.
Did you drive around that?
Me neither.
Aztec
he probably did before he made drug deals. And we all got
I was thinking like a 97 Dodge Neon.
Great car.
Like, you just said that it had to land, though. You can't land anything in a Dodge Neon.
Yeah, but, you know, it probably has, like,
decent pickup. You should have gone Ford Fiesta.
So where I live, all of them are on Ford F1 to 2 50s? To 3 50s. Yeah.
That's Minnesota, man.
And they're usually all directly above that very classy and very, like, I am a cultured man nutsack that hangs down from the from the trailer hitch. So, yeah, I don't know
if
it lands.
It's important to stay grounded. It's important to stay grounded.
It really is, man. You got to ride those nuts.
bless you, Kitsap.
Yeah.
Just don't hit any speed bumps with those things.
P.O. living, baby. So, generally speaking, Scott, I really liked that little perspective that you gave there, and especially as somebody who was really kind of writing and following the team back in those days too. Like, we have been through this before, and it's really important to understand that. And when we say that we're excited, I think it's important to make it clear, like, we're not expecting or predicting the World Series this year. We're really hoping for it. That would be amazing and fun. But I mean, we're all Mariner fans. We've all been doing this for decades, or in David's case, 5 years, however long we've been adults.
I think excitement without expectation is the most fun kind of excitement.
I would agree personally. With that. Yep.
I think
the Mariners didn't have that last year.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that. There was some expectation. They were being picked as a breakout team. There was, you know, Cruz coming in, Jack Cerenzik last stand. There was just a lot on the table all the way around, mm-hmm. you know, so it was just totally
I would
different.
Argue last year the expectation was as high as it's been in a long time.
I don't remember 100% agree. With that kind of expectation since the
90s. I'd say 2010 Mariners actually had quite a bit of expectation.
True.
But that was
more. They got Cliff Lee and they got the ESPN cover.
I feel like
and
that was media driven, though. That was last year was special because it felt like the media and the analytics and the projections were all kind of aligning to say, like, this team's going to be good. And, like, you see the Fangraphs projections and the BP Pecota standings and all that. And it came out, and the Mariners were like, holy crap, they're going to win more games than any team in the American League. And, like, it's just that hasn't happened in so long. And in fact, like, that just got released this year. If you guys were paying attention to that.
Sure. I think this year, from a fan perspective and from a projection perspective, has some expectations tied to it.
Mm-hmm. Because of that aging core and the teams that they have.
I think so. The Fangraphs cool standings came out and showed the Mariners as the second wildcard team.
Was it that they were the second wild
card? Yeah, with like 82 and a half wins or whatever.
Yeah, 82 and a half wins, second wild card. It's them or the Yankees.
82.2.
Yeah, pretty much head to head, them or the Yankees for that second wild card.
Well, I wonder if that's changed. Well, I'm just seeing now that I don't know what it was before, but after Chapman's suspension yesterday, they're now almost a full win below the Mariners at 81.3 on their, on their projection. So right now, yeah, it's the Mariners at 82.2 wins, which, I mean, we talked last week about the idea of really what, for the kind of organization that the Mariners have right now, you want to build a roster of 83 to 86 wins projection and then just hope that you exceed that enough to parlay it into a wild card. Right now they're projected at 5.4 wins below the Astros, which David's not buying the Astros at all.
I'm not. I think it's Texas for me.
They're getting Yu Darvish back. I think Yu Darvish is going to tear up people.
He's nasty.
It's like we almost kind of forgot about him.
And exactly. Cole Hamels for an entire year.
Yeah.
And Cole Hamels is, I mean.
And Odor is a stud.
Rougned?
Yeah, he's very good.
He's terrifying. Yeah. But you know who else looks great? And this is, again, just all projection and just we're getting excited about it. But David, you've been riding the Robinson Cano bounce back year all year.
Yeah.
And the guy just. And it's the time of year where everything sounds sunny and great, and we just we can't emphasize enough how much like we get that we're this is the time of year where we're getting too excited about these
too excited
but sure. yeah but we're gonna let ourselves do that because totally. It's way better than just being sad about everything or well actualing every positive thing we can come up with. But
well actually
in 2012
Robinson Cano had a long toenail.
Yeah. Robinson Cano looks great from all accounts.
He looks amazing shape.
Sounds happy, sounds healthy. And other than 2008, there is really no track record of a healthy Robinson Cano not being a really, really, really good
top 10 MLB player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's really, I mean, if you want to paint the picture of the Mariners are going to exceed that 82.2 wins and like
it's him.
Push upper 80s, it's going to be that kind of thing. It's going to be, it's going to take the star power. Cruz is going to have to hold off to Klein and man, he's.
Let's hope those knees aren't a thing.
Yeah. Wonky knees. Please DH him all year. Please DH him all year.
We talked about this last week too, but I'm with David. I got some reservations about the DH all year and the positional, like the mental thing about that. Like, I didn't believe that. Like, I'll be the first to admit that I called bullshit on that. Like, so many times when people said, you know, oh, it's a mental thing and it's hard. I was like, whatever. Now I am kind of swinging towards admitting that I don't know everything.
So if you're gonna,
it's totally difficult to DH. I mean, literally, your job as a DH is to pinch hit at least 3 at bats.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because not going out for defense, as colloquial or weird as it may sound, totally gets you out of the rhythm. I mean, what are you supposed to do to stay in the game? Go hit some balls off a tee, which is what they do typically. They go, you know, maybe swing in the cages a couple times between at bats, but it's a totally different vibe for playing baseball than what you've been trained to do since you were 5 years old.
But to talk like, and we've all, Scott and I particularly, have kind of like baptized our fandom in Moneyball and sabermetric thought. If we're going to admit that, hey, we used to call bullshit on the idea of it's hard to DH, can we also maybe say that there's something to the fact that the hitting coach for the Mariners is probably the greatest designated hitter of all time? And if he can impart a little bit of how that works to Nelson Cruz, that maybe it could balance that out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder if at 36 he's past the point of being able to – or if mental tips – I mean, of course, they gleam at some point, but I don't know how much.
Well, Cruz has already proven he's coachable. He's already gone I'm about to wash out of Major League Baseball in my late 20s
to
Scott Service and said, hey, maybe you should open your stance up a little bit and a couple other things. It wasn't that simple. But, you know, the guy's already proven that he's willing to kind of like – take advice from his coaches in order to make over his game. So you're hopeful that he'll be able to figure that out. And I don't think anybody – what are we reasonably expecting from Cruz? 80% of last year, maybe? He was
– Scott and I both said four wins last week.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Totally happening.
Four wins is
– As a DH, I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
As a DH only,
it really depends on how much he's going to play.
Let's just talk offensive.
If it's 50-50, it's doable. If he's playing all the games there, he's going to have to rake.
Well, and I think he's going to be playing most of the games there, too.
If you mean a pure offensive season, I think he can do 40 bombs again.
Well, let's see. Last year, his gear last year was just ridiculous. He WRC plused 158 last year, which is just, I just don't know. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
We haven't seen that in so long.
It's still one of the two or three greatest seasons in the history of the Safeco era for a Mariner offensive player, and to get it was just they wasted it. But what do we realistically think he's going to get? He had 137 the year before in Baltimore, and then 122 and 106 his last 2 years in Texas. I personally, if he WRC plus is 130 to 135, I'm going to be excited.
Yeah, I'm for sure pleased.
I mean, we're not just talking about replacing Nelson Cruz from last year. We're talking about Nelson Cruz moving to DH and replacing the Mariners DH last year, which was terrible.
Exactly.
And then, so bad. And then replacing that production in right field with something a little bit above league average. So it's a whole calculation that's bigger than Nelson Cruz at that point.
Well, of course. And that's why if he WRC plus is 130 to 140, like you said, you have to think the Mariners are doing well, because you can't expect them to hit the 8 out of 9 floor that they hit in the rest of the lineup pretty much.
Well, yeah, and they're not, like we talked about this last week, they're not depending on guys that are just basically like unproven major league players to come in and do things that they haven't done before. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot.
Well, and you guys are both calling for Kyle to step up, and I think that's totally reasonable.
You know, and it sounds like I'm just jumping on coattails because it happened today, but I really think Chris Iannetta could end up being like a 2 to 3 win catcher this year, and I think
that would be huge.
Just a week ago, we were talking about how he could be a colossal disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think
how dingers change everything.
What you don't understand, Scott, is like that he hit a home run today. Maybe you
and it was far
and hit very hard.
Am I gonna be the resident wet blanket? Because I'm starting to feel like it.
I mean,
I don't
want to
be. I'm here for fun and chicks, man.
If you guys talk about love, I can be the resident wet blanket.
We're not gonna talk about that.
But no, I mean, to be fair though, that Chris Iannetta dinger. I mean, whoever that poor pitcher was in the second inning,
and he was
missed his spot.
He was a no
by. Yeah, by literally 18 to 24 inches.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Chris, I think what we're thinking for Chris Iannetta is just, I mean, we want to think that he bottomed out last year because he hit 188. And, you know, it was just a disaster offensively. And I think the whole thing with him is just, he's just going to be not one of the worst players in baseball. Like, the Mariners had a catcher all year last year, and we talked about that last week, too.
Is it possible to propose that Mike Socha just might be an absolute chemistry clubhouse killer?
I think the game has passed him by. I think he had his day, and I think that's passed at this point. I don't know how you guys would feel about that, but he's not.
I think it came and went with Jeff Mathis.
I mean, he's got the best player in baseball on his roster.
Who doesn't seem at all happy to be playing baseball?
Nobody's – well – Pujols has never seemed happy to be playing baseball, but
we're in agreement that Pujols is the best player in baseball, right?
Of course.
All those opposed,
nay. Silence. There you go.
Nothing there. He's adequately paid for his services.
Absolutely. Bargain.
There are a few guys in baseball that I would less rather play for than Mike Socha. I don't know if you guys saw the story about from last year when DePoto had his falling out when it came out that Socha wouldn't let Mike Trout have a Nerf hoop up in the clubhouse.
It's so ridiculous.
Mike Trout couldn't have a Nerf hoop in the clubhouse.
As if, like, that is going to take
I'm
going to
just do a thing here
game.
Where I look up Mike Socha's career war, and we're going to compare that to a year of Mike Trout's career. Okay, so a little bit more than I expected. So Mike Socha was at 20.
He was pretty solid.
Yeah, he was at 28.5 F4 for his career
over
13 seasons. And then we're going to compare that to Mike Trout, who is at 38.5 in 5 years. So,
and how old is Mike Trout?
Much younger than Mike.
Is he 22 or 23?
He is 24 years old.
24. Right. Oh my God, Mike Trout's younger than me.
That is saying something.
Wow. There you go.
Bryce Harper is also younger than you.
Bryce Harper is significantly younger than me.
Yeah. So is Carlos Correa. You guys want to talk
about
that?
So is Ketel Marte.
Oh,
Nelson Cruz is older than me.
and me. But not, is he older than Patrick? That'd be a good question for Patrick.
We should ask Patrick.
So what else is standing out to you guys this week? What else is fun and exciting? What do we have here? Do you guys want to do some, we had some questions about,
let's do questions.
Do you guys want to do a quick break? Do a quick musical interlude and maybe grab another beer and do that and do anything else we have to do? All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play some music for you. We'll be right back.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier, lift your stein and drink your beer. Two eyes that are bright as stars when they're shining on me.
Drink. Sweet as the fruit on the tree. Here's a hope that those bright eyes will shine lovingly, longingly soon into mine. May those lips that are red and sweet tonight with joy my own lips meet. Drink.
Okay, we're back. We got more beer. We're ready to keep this rolling. We're going to do some Twitter questions from you guys. Thank you so much for reaching out to us. Scott, you have the first one. What do you got?
We've got a question here from Kyle Rancourt, at Kyle Rancourt. He says, who's your favorite Mariner of the last decade who no one else liked, and then nominated Jack Hanrahan, who was a favorite of our double predecessor, John Shields?
Yes. Mm. So he's not nearly as special as – you're not nearly as special as you think you are, Kyle. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, it's not that unique.
Nope.
Someone else loved him. Invalid. Like every other snowflake. Next question. Invalidated subject. Next question. No, really. Who did you love for no real reason?
Do you have one? Because I need to think about it for a second.
Yeah, do you have one off the bat?
I mean, it's not Brad Miller, but it could be Brad Miller.
But lots of people like Brad.
People liked him.
Yeah. Yeah. I got some peeps, but I want to hear what you guys have to say first.
God, there were some dark times 10 years.
You know who
now.
I loved, and it was dumb and stupid because I was just an idiot. I really loved Josh Wilson, like right when he came up, and
Trader
was
boy.
Like he dropped a bomb, which in retrospect was the most ridiculous thing because Josh Wilson doesn't—he just cannot hit home runs. And Griffey called him the paper boy because he always delivers.
Yep.
And it just took off.
Which is outrageous.
And I think it may have been the same year right before we traded for Jack Wilson. And man, there are people on staff that are going to listen to this and just be berating me for not having encyclopedic knowledge of the last 20 years of Mariner history. But Josh Wilson just seemed like he was making the play whenever we needed it at the time. And I just wanted the team to win. And I think it may have been 2010, which was the saddest, the darkest timeline. For a Mariner season, but
yeah,
man, everybody hated on Josh. It's probably the Willie Bloomquist fan in me that just there was something about Josh Wilson that just really captured my fancy.
He's not from Kitsap County.
I did not play Little League against him. It's true.
It's funny that yours is a shortstop because I think mine is too, which is Unieski,
and no!
I think he was pretty. He's
Buzz's
pretty
girlfriend. Woof.
I don't even know. I mean, wasn't his first PA as a Mariner a triple, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, and I remember watching that as a younger person than I am now and being like, this is my dude. And then he decided that he hated Andy Chavez, and I was kind of over it. But
and not eating. Hated not eating.
Yeah. Hated not eating. But as a when he first came up, I was so behind. I was very
well, and people I was already a very well along in his 20s man by the time Unieski came up, and I remember watching a Rainiers game when he was in AAA with a scout because I had a connection at the time, and the scout loved Unieski, and you could see it. He made a play up the middle that was just that guy's range when he first was coming up.
Yeah,
was
before all the bugles. Before the bugles.
Oh, you know what? I just remembered the other relief. The relief pitcher that I loved, who I think maybe had a half a season with the Mariners, was Bobby Madrish.
No, he was
or
a starter.
Bobby Madrish.
He was a starter
with the oh my gosh, Dreamcatcher tattoo on his neck. He was a reliever, American right? Background.
I thought he was a starter. Scott?
Oh, I don't know. I got to look it up. I thought he was a starter, too.
I swear he was a reliever.
David, how old were you when Bobby Madrich was a Mariner?
Seven.
He was a Mariner in 2004 and 2005.
Oh, it's not 06. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
he started 11.
Primarily a starter.
He started 11 games in 2004. And went 6-3 and had more success than he possibly should have. And I remember reading something about him a couple years ago where he was somewhere running a program for inner city kids and trying to help them get their lives back together or get their lives started or something. He just seemed like a great dude. So that's a great choice, actually. Bobby Madrich was actually Bob Melvin's greatest sin as a Mariner manager, because I have to look it up. But the guy threw an absurd number of pitches in a lost season in 2004. I'm going to let Scott talk first while I find that.
All right. Yeah,
I was going to say, Bobby Madrich has the saddest major league story of all time. Well, not of all time.
All time.
But he pretty much blew the elbow and never came back.
I just found it. So in 2004, so he blew the...
Thanks for letting me talk. Appreciate that.
He blew
that.
The elbow. Whoa. We've had enough of you. You had your moment. You ran the site for 2.5 years, pipe down.
Seriously, get over it, man.
Yeah. So in September 29th, 2004, in a season where the Mariners lost a lot of games, Bobby Madrich pitched in game 158, 9 innings, pitched a complete game, struck out 4, walked 4, threw 133 pitches.
Oh.
Why? He threw 120 pitches. Threw more than 120 pitches 3 times in September of that year.
Bob,
and 119 another game that in that September.
Why not?
I mean, why not? It's just the guy's career. Whatever.
Yeah, loosen up the arm.
He's
let it go.
Still only just turned 40.
Hey, that's viable.
Again, maybe older. I mean, younger than Patrick. We have no idea.
Patrick's ageless.
Who's older, Patrick or Robert Pujols, really?
Well,
whose contract would I purchase? I'd purchase
Patrick is a far better writer than Albert.
All right, I got a couple. I got a couple that were hated that I wouldn't say loved, but I liked. First one of those is going to be Jose Vidro.
No.
You look up how decent Jose Vidro was in 2007, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised.
He was like a poor man's Richie Sexton in that sense that we did not appreciate his offensive skills in the mid-aughts because we were fresh off of the early 2000 glory years.
He only lasted half a year in 2008. I mean, really. He didn't play that much in 2008. He was bad. But 2007, he had his best year. He was better than he was with the Nationals when he came over in 2007. He was really, really solid.
I just remember one year he hit a walk-off home run against the Red Sox at a game that I was at. And he pimped it, hit it and just flipped the bat and started to walk. And I think the ball may have cleared the fence by 6 inches.
Oh my gosh, guys. Jose Vidro Mariner years are so bleak.
I was
2007. He was 1 win. 2008 minus 1.3.
And we loved him for it.
Wow. Yep. 2007. Pretty good year. That was the
9 OPS.
That was a... That was the Eric O'Flaherty year. Wow.
Oh, hey, his walk rate was over his K rate, though.
You know who else I'm going to say who I did not hate as much as everyone else is Eric Bedard. I'll throw in Eric Bedard.
Eric Bedard.
I never had beef with Eric Bedard.
When he came back, I mean, that was a hat tip to the org.
Talk about a guy that knew his limitations, was honest about them, and we all crucified it. We crucified him.
Yeah, that's true.
That's 80%
this is a guy who was like,
acquire,
listen,
isn't it?
I'm good.
Oh,
for...
that's mostly Adam Jones became a stud.
Yep. Well, thanks, Pavesi.
I wish that I had spent an entire summer of my life arguing about that trade on the Seattle Times blogs as a much younger man, and I wish that the columnist for and beat writer for the Seattle Mariners at that time had not strongly backed the idea because Adam Jones was not proven and had wished that Octavio Dotel had in fact been acquired for Adam Jones.
Well, I mean, that was said writer is a very well-reasoned and rational person with many hot takes, which we're a fan of on this
podcast.
We're
going here episode two.
Yeah, I mean, we're a fan of hot takes. Anyone that's got a take that's hot, it's good.
It's good.
This guy, Daryl P. Skeeby, all of them. All my favorite takes.
All of them.
I do have a question. Is Jose Lopez considered a hated Mariner?
No. More of just lovingly mocked. Like, the guy came up, he was an all-star because he caught fire for the first half of 2006, which is hilarious. You can click on his baseball reference page and it says all-star. And then just, he was 22 when he made the all-star team, David. So yeah. Like, think like second baseman,
Ketel Marte goes, yeah.
But then it just never got better. And he was such
Although 2008 was his best year with us.
I just remember, well, offensively, but I just remember with Lopez, he had the nicest smile. He just seemed like such a genuinely sweet guy.
True.
And he went through all of this family tragedy as a Mariner, whereas like every time you even wanted to make fun of him, you really kind of felt bad because I think he lost his brother and another relative from some like kind of unexpected tragedy. So he was a really hard guy to hate. You could get really frustrated watching him play baseball, but you could say the same thing about literally hundreds of Mariners. So
that guy hit so many 335-foot homers to left field.
He would have been such a good Red Sox. He was John Valentin. He's who he was. Just pull it right over the Green Monster. But
in 2004, Bobby Madrish pitched 88 innings and accumulated 2.3 WAR.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
He's a solid player. Do we have any other questions that we want to get to?
Let me check the old Twitter sphere.
Okay.
Chris asked, Munenori Espresso Stand asked us what a successful year from the 2016 Mariners looks like.
It's a great question.
And I think that is a great question.
And really the answer.
I think all three of us have a very different opinion of that.
I mean, okay. Well, there's many levels that you can say that they're going to be successful. But if we're just talking pure wins and losses, like if you want to just bury it down to like how many games they win and where do they finish at the end of the year, this team needs to make the playoffs. They need to make the second wild card for me to say that there's a million things that could happen outside of that. You know, they could develop.
How about for you to be comfortable with Jerry DePoto's new regime?
They avoid collapse and show a lot of promise with their ability to develop players.
Does one of the languishing prospects need to take a noticeable uptick for you to be impressed?
Something the Andy McKay
does that really reflect on DePoto though?
In year one,
does that reflect on DePoto?
Well, who do we blame for the complete collapse of the farm system last year?
Zarenzik's regime had 5 years, right? Or 6 years.
Right, but the farm system wasn't a disaster until last year.
It showed
promise, and then everybody was bad last year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It takes a while to find out how good a regime it is at player development.
But were
it takes a while.
Were they always bad, or did just something particularly go wrong last year?
I think they were always pretty bad, but it kind of got confirmed once everybody graduated, and then they didn't have the bounce back year after they struggled the first time.
So it snowballed.
I think it's almost like building a case, right? Like more and more evidence continues to stack up, and then you just can't deny it, and then he gets fired.
But what you're looking for
took 6 years. But
that's why I'm saying, like, what you want to see is, I guess what you're saying is, so say in 2015, DJ Peterson collapsed. Right?
I'm not putting that on DePoto.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2015. He collapsed last year. So for him to bounce back to something moderately considering his 50th percentile expectation, do we give DePoto credit for that? Or do we just say, well, he's just competent?
I need to see a pattern of that happening before I give him credit. It's a sample size thing again.
So we're gonna say for year one, for a successful year, it's basically wins and losses at the major league level?
Yes, more or less.
And they need to make the playoffs.
If he gives this team the upside chance to compete for a wild card, which for me is about a 5-win swing.
Mm-hmm.
So if he gets within 5 wins of a wild card, mm-hmm. then I think that he's done his goal, which is if everything goes right, this team can make the playoffs. That's where I think that they're at right now, and he didn't mortgage any future to get there. So that's a success for me. And you know, whatever that case may be, I think if you're right around 500 or you're just above 500, you're probably 5 games out, maybe 6. So, you know, that's a success for me. I mean, I'm just looking for this team to be relatively competitive and then wait to take the big gambles, you know, later on. That's the philosophy he's set forth. And in year one, all you do is trust in the guy, right? We're talking about he's doing everything right.
Unless there's a preponderance of evidence to the contrary, sure.
Right. I guess, can I say something, though?
No.
What?
Okay. Absolutely not.
Thank you.
Nathan, continue.
What? Name another roster that has 3 superstars on it.
Who are you qualifying as a superstar?
I'm saying Nelson, Robbie, Felix. I think they're superstars.
Uh-huh. I would say Kyle rosters. Really close.
Okay. So maybe fringe 4.
Yeah.
Name another roster that has 3.
Cubs.
Of course.
You could go Jake.
You could go
Arrieta. You could go Anthony Rizzo.
They've got Dodgers.
Zobrist. They've got Jason Hayward.
Okay. Cubs, Dodgers. Name one in the AL.
Nationals.
You could go Diamondbacks.
You could go Astros.
They've got Diamondbacks. They have A.J. Pollock. They've got Paul Goldschmidt. Now they've got Zach Greinke.
Astros.
Okay.
Dallas Keuchel, Carlos Correa.
You think Keuchel's for real?
I mean, he won the Cy Young last year. He was really good.
I hate his beard, but you know. So did Kluber the year before.
How'd that work out for you, Cleveland?
Gotcha.
Enjoy losing in the Eastern Conference semifinals to the Wizards.
Are
the Wizards
watching reruns of the Drew Carey Show?
Cleveland rocks. It doesn't.
Nailed it.
I guess my point is, this team is in a very rare place with its talent, and I think needs to be making the playoffs.
I want to go to Safeco Field in September and be excited about the possibility. I think, and that's kind of what Scott was going for. I think. Like, let me go to the game and be like,
sure.
What if?
I think that is relative to the history of the team, successful. But I think relative to the current 2016 roster, success should be a playoff season because of the current talent. And I think because of the history, they can be a little underachieving of making the playoffs and still be considered successful. But I think based on pure talent, the 2016 roster's success is playoffs.
Well, and I think you're going off of, like, I don't know if you guys read what our staff author Meg Rowley wrote this morning, but it was basically just a what-if scenario. And it was just, you know, what if the leadership for the Mariners the last 2 or 3 years has been so broken that it's left their ceiling artificially low? And what if Jerry DePoto, whether he's a genius or not, what if he's just not terrible? And just bringing in somebody not terrible unlocks the potential for what is in that roster. Because you're right, David, there are really good players on this team. So, yeah, I don't know if that's a realistic expectation, though. The American League is really tough, and the American League West especially so. And
edit out the silence.
Yeah.
No. I'm just processing success. We'll chew on it. This team.
No, I'm with you, Nathan. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, it's hard, I think, to make a call like that because you have 2 different things that you consider, right? Like I talked about, you have this, it's the first year you want to see the plan that DePoto set forth take place and for them to just contend. And that's enough. But at the same time, the Mariners are still in like a very distinct window of win now without the surrounding talent to be there.
Yep, it's very strange.
Like it's like
it's a poorly constructed win now window.
Yes, it is. We've got Cano, we've got Felix, we've got Cruz. Those are all guys who we don't know how many productive years they have left,
if any.
So he's given the team a chance to succeed. Yet we I look at the team and I think success is maybe just competing. I mean, maybe my standards are too low. Maybe it's not enough. Maybe he should have gone bigger this offseason. Like, I don't know. It's going to be hindsight 2020, but
you don't think he has to, David?
I don't think he needed to go. I mean, of course, on the site, I'm very well documented as being sort of negative on the Aoki acquisition because I thought we should have maybe plunged for a corner outfielder given the market. But I think based on talent, this is a playoff team and it should be judged by the playoffs. Of course, I will still be excited come early October if they go 85 wins, don't make the playoffs. I will be very excited.
Kettle Marte went three and a half wins. And,
oh, God. Yeah, I mean,
Martin that's, bounced yeah. back.
And maybe the farm takes an uptick. That's big to me. But I do think on pure talent, this should be a playoff roster.
Yeah.
It's absolutely arguable, and I think maybe too optimistic, but I think this might be the best rotation in the AL.
It has the upside to be one.
Upside, certainly.
Yeah, for sure.
Current assumptions, probably not.
Yeah, I would agree. Current.
Whose would you put up there besides?
The Astros. I have a really good rotation. The Rangers have a really good rotation. Even the Tigers have a good rotation.
Shout out to Matty Boyd.
Yeah.
If you eliminate all injury concerns and choose the upside, sure.
Yeah.
I can absolutely
but
see
Hisashi,
it.
But don't we have to do that with every team?
No, because every injury more concerns. So yeah. You guys, let's wrap it up soon because we're getting a little bit long. But let's transition away from the questions. And we were talking about something during the break about the idea of in the interest of Tony Zitch getting a pool table purchased for him by Robinson Cano, because apparently Tony Zitch is a pool shark. And Tony, if you're listening to this, we will judge that by you playing us at pool. We're bad. But
you beat me, you're a shark.
That's correct. It's really good, I guess. But what would you guys – what if you could have one game – in the clubhouse?
Oh, it's a game. Okay.
Or no, not even a game, I guess. But if you have an item,
could be a leisure activity.
A leisure activity beyond, you know, playing baseball for a living.
Sure.
What would you have in the clubhouse in order to break up the momentum?
I think I would go for some arcade games.
Yes.
I think that'd be just fantastic. You have a nice little bank of arcade games up against one wall. Got to get some NBA Jam in there.
Oh,
you
that'd be so good.
Got to get some Simpsons arcade game in there.
Jeez.
Maybe a little bit of X-Men, you know, one of those four-player type games.
Dungeon Siege, wasn't that one?
Could be Gauntlet Legends.
Gauntlet Legends,
is what
yes,
you're going
Gauntlet
for
Legends,
there.
Yep.
You could definitely toss in a little NFL Blitz. Epic arcade
such
game.
Such a great game.
Got to have Super Off-Road, no doubt about that.
With the wheel.
Cruising
with
USA. The wheel.
Yep, that dude, that bastard in the gray car.
Every time.
That whole time, man.
Yeah.
He's just the worst.
That'd be good. That's a good. You just want games you can bet on, and you can bet on Super Off-Road.
And I'm super good at all those games, so that's really going to go well for me.
What was the jet ski, the Wave Runner game?
That was a GameCube game, wasn't it?
No, also, there was...
Oh, and there's an arcade game where like you actually straddle a thing, right?
Yeah.
And if you go to like GameWorks, by the way, have you guys ever been to a GameWorks in like the past 5 years?
No.
All of the games are the same as they were in like 2004.
Just a lot of
straddling.
They don't make new arcade games.
No.
The arcade games that they make now, it's like, hey, come play Angry Birds or Fruit Ninja and pay a dollar to play it for 10 minutes instead of for your life by buying it in the App Store. Really, that's what it's like now,
David.
Let's go to. Are we going to GameWorks right now, guys?
We can go. We'll broadcast live from GameWorks or Dave and Buster's or
episode 3
points.
Live from GameWorks. It's very sad and
live
it's
from the ball pit of GameWorks.
Let's talk to this kid who's crying right now because he just lost all of his tickets and cannot get a plush something. David, what game or item would you have in the clubhouse?
I think mine would be like a 350 gallon saltwater fish tank.
That sounds normal. that sounds like something that everybody has in their clubhouse.
And it's because I used to take care of fish tanks for the college I worked for. I acquired a grant to get a big saltwater fish tank. It takes at least an hour of maintenance a day, gets your mind off of things. It's very beautiful, sort of like you're curating your own living world, and it would get my mind right.
Would you enjoy the fact that you had to go on road trips and had to entrust it into a staffer and he would immediately kill all of your fish?
I would not enjoy that part. However, it would present a challenge every time I came back.
Next man up.
Next man up. Which one of you minimum wage college sophomores is going to keep the algae out of my tank?
Talking about The Simpsons, just that one kid who's always got the acne and the breaking voice. I won't catch your fish, sir.
The clownfish just keep floating to the top.
I've got some nettles in my throat from the fish.
What's yours?
Mine, you know, it's tried and true and really cliche, but you just give me a ping pong table with some friends and a little free time. We're going to have a good time. I'm not particularly great at ping pong, but I'm good enough in order to be able to hang where if somebody beats me, they feel like they've accomplished something. And really, like I was telling Scott, I think that the whole idea in Clubhouse is you want to be able to bet and gamble. Gambling's what makes all of that flow and talk trash. And these guys are high level athletes. They just want to win and lose at everything that they do. And ping pong's a great game. I've played it in college as everybody else has. I stopped playing when I left college and got married and had kids as everybody else does. I have one in my garage that I never play.
You haven't said don't have kids.
You should not have kids. Dude, wow. Listener. Do not.
Number four is hitting hard.
Don't do it. So yeah, I'd go for ping pong. And
that's a good one.
Yeah, ping pong's a great game.
Let me ask a quick side question before we wrap up here. Going back to the Boston years a few years ago, they banned beer in the clubhouse. If you're a manager, what is your stance on your starting pitcher on days in which he is definitely not throwing, going into the bullpen or going into the dugout and just getting ripped during games?
In the dugout?
No, I mean, he goes into the clubhouse and just slams some beers and then comes and sits with everyone else until the inning's over, and then he goes and he pounds another.
The problem with this is that you...
Do you care? Because that's definitely what happened in Boston.
I'd be jealous.
What's he doing? That's the question. Because as it always comes down to how much of a distraction is this? What's the overall team culture? Like, that's kind of a
he's
case by case.
He's seeing how many pieces of double bubble he can fit in his mouth at once.
Here's the thing, Scott. If we're winning, who
gives
a shit? I was
just going to say, is the team winning?
Yes. But if you're staring down like your job's on the line and you're going to be under 500 by 15 games, no way.
Yeah, because that's the thing. The 2004 Red Sox that won the World Series, was it 2004?
Yes. The idiots.
Those guys, yeah, the idiots. They were taking shots of tequila before playoff games to go out onto the field.
That's amazing.
Which is super endearing because they won. But if they had lost and that had come out later, it would have been like drunk Red Sox squander opportunity. So yeah. That whole story with John Lackey and the fried chicken and the beer and everything, that was just, you know, if that doesn't come out into the public, no one cares. I would, unless I'm in a media environment where that kind of thing could really cause a media, like a crap storm, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. As long as the guy's ready to keep it together. And obviously that could be different if it's a CC Sabathia situation where you're just, you know,
of course,
worried about the guy.
It's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, for the most part, I think that the worst thing that most major league managers can do is not treat these guys like adults and let them manage their own preparation and time. So yeah, you guys do what you want to do as long as you're not Jonathan Papelbon,
dude. At the end of the day, for me, it's baseball, right? And it's not football. Like, if you want to have some beers after the game, that's cool.
David, can you confirm, is baseball football?
Baseball is sort of football. They're both ball.
That's the kind of groundbreaking expertise clothes you get in hour 30 of the podcast.
Strong close. Thank you, David. Okay, we should wrap it up, you guys, and get it all the way. You guys have any closing thoughts or anything about the team that you're looking forward to in spring? Let's close it with one thing that you're going to be keeping a close eye on in spring training for the team, or if there's one thing that you're hoping they do or hoping that they don't do. outside of injury?
For me, I'm just keeping a super close eye on the first base battle, the platoon partner battle. I think that's going to be really interesting. I'm always fascinated how teams can possibly make decisions on spring training.
Yeah.
And it's not really going to be about the numbers. It's about the stuff that we don't necessarily see on games. So who knows what goes into that decision process. But I'm definitely fascinated to at least watch how both of these guys, both Lee and Montero, like their athleticism.
And it, Sanchez. You know,
it's, not in it.
You know, you think he's out?
Yeah, he's out.
He may be the most athletic of the three and is also out of it.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't think he's got a chance.
Lee's club picture is a treasure.
Yeah, I want to see it. It's just exciting to see progress and also see new faces. And I think the best part about spring training is getting way too wrapped up in things that don't matter at all. So what is realistically the difference between Montero and Lee at first base in terms of wins in the 2016 season? Yeah, that's your margin right there. It's probably half a win.
Yep.
But there could be implications for the future after that you can get way too wrapped up in, and that's what's fun. I love getting wrapped up in stuff.
You guys are higher on Lee than I am, I think.
Yeah. What are you looking for, David, in spring training? Is there anything you're keeping an eye on?
I want to see Guillermo, and we still don't have the pronunciation.
Heredia. That's what you said, right?
Yes. Yeah.
We have yet to have a definitive correction.
Yes, we still don't know the pronunciation, but I want to see Guillermo.
You're 0% Hispanic, see him. So it's fine.
I want to see him 2 years removed from ball. He, in the pictures, looks like he's in stupid shape.
In a good
way. I want to see him take a couple at bats, frankly. Or I'm excited to see them post a clip of him taking BP, taking fly balls. I'm excited to see what he's about.
Yeah, I'm really excited to watch the rotation go through a couple times through and just
What? I'm sorry, what's that?
Was that you?
Yeah, just tossing an empty bottle.
Cool. All right. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see the rotation go through a couple times and just see how everybody looks, make sure everybody looks healthy. At this point, other than Nelson Cruz's knees, which is really there, the team is saying is not a big deal. Everybody seems healthy. So I want to see all of the rotation. Paxton looked good today. I want to see him and Carnes really go at it toe-to-toe and have that be a real battle of not attrition, but who's going to rise to the top and really elevate what they're doing in order to win a spot in the rotation. So
totally.
I think the rotation, like I think David was saying, I think that's the highest upside part of the team right now. If everything's going to go right, that's going to be what's going to carry him. It's going to be the starting rotation. So very excited for that. We're going to wrap it up now and say goodbye. I am so grateful that you managed to listen to it all the way through. We're going to do this next week, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, and that everybody is still available, and we'll do more questions and hopefully have a guest with us next week. So on behalf of Scott and David and all of the contributors at Lookout Landing, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week on Dome in Bedlam. Thank you.